Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our callers. And before we get to our special guest this evening, I just wanted to mention that yesterday evening I'd made a comment that the new Washington gold coin didn't have "In God We Trust" on the coin, because I'd seen one and I didn't notice it there, and then an email was circulated saying it wasn't there. And after I made the remark on the program, why, one of our callers called and said, well, what they did is they put it on the rim of the coin, and that's exactly where it is. We checked it today. So they did leave "In God We Trust." It's taken off the face of the coin, put on the rim of the coin, so we want to make sure if we say something here, it's accurate. That's the one problem doing talk radio. If you say something that isn't accurate, you jolly well better go ahead and get it corrected, because I want you to be able to trust what you hear here. So that brings us into our special guest this evening. I get more emails asking me to make sure that I have Barry Shamish on the program. And so, well, this evening Barry's going to be with us once again. Barry is an Israeli patriot. He's Jewish. He loves his country. He's been working for many years to try to awaken the people of Israel to the fact that they're being betrayed by their leaders. He was able to actually convince probably a majority of the Israeli people that Yitzhak Rabin, the premier of Israel, was actually murdered as a result of a government coup effort. The man who is in prison today was simply a patsy, like Lee Harvey Oswald was a patsy in the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. But be that as it may, in recent years, of course, Barry's message has not been very popular over in Israel. The idea that the leaders of Israel, whether they be in the Labor or the other party there, are really out there to betray the Israeli people and to lead to the destruction of Israel. Well, Barry, of course, is living in Canada at the present time, writing frantically, still trying to sound the clarion call. And so with us is Barry Shamish once again. Hi, Barry. How are you doing?
Hi. Oh, I'm fine, and you'll be delighted to know that tonight, with the extra time, we're going to get right to the bottom of the destruction of Israel and the destruction of our planet. If we want to get down to it, it's the same forces. Look, I'm going to make a very powerful claim, and I should have made this claim before, but I wasn't certain. I didn't have enough evidence that fits. But I'll say it now. The Rabin murder was directed by the Vatican. There's no question whatsoever that Peres was the Vatican's spy in Israel. And by the way, I'm going to ask your readers to go to the archives. I don't want to give the background to Peres being caught. I have a book, maybe if you write me, Shamish, Chamish, at netvision.net.il, Shamish at netvision.net.il, IL is Israel. The book is called Traitors and Carpetbaggers in the Promised Land. It was my first American book. It describes Shimon Peres getting caught, giving away Jerusalem to the Vatican. We've got him on paper, and all of Israel caught him. This we're not going to do tonight.
All right, you hold the thought there, Barry. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, Barry, go right ahead.
What we're going to do is state the obvious, that Peres murdered Rabin. This I have proven. And again, I hate to do this, but no one is going to believe me without this help. get my book, Who Murdered Yitzhak Rabin? It's at lulu.com, www.lulu.com. And I've got another 50 pages of evidence. And go read the sources yourself. I can't do it on the radio, but Shimon Peres murdered Yitzhak Rabin. I've been saying it for 12 years. No one, well, I shouldn't say no one's tried to harm me. Plenty of people now have tried to harm me, and they've done a pretty good job of it. But the fact outstanding remains that Shimon Peres did murder Rabin, and no one is taking me to court for that statement. And I've been making that statement for a long, long time, and it has affected Shimon Peres' political career. Again, we're the archives on that. The core of the matter is, if Peres was going to knock off Rabin, it was for the Vatican. And how do we know that? And now, I've been saying this in my speeches, but I have not properly stressed it. And now is the time to stress it. People, go into Google and look up Abu Dis Agreement. I guess it would be A-B-U-D-I-S, because 11 days before Yitzhak Rabin was murdered, in the city of Paris, France, the Abu Dis Agreement was signed. It was signed by the two Israeli spies for the Vatican, Shimon Peres and Yossi Beilin. It was signed by all the direct from the PLO, but was also signed by both Chirac and Mitterrand. Peres, Shimon, finally gave the Vatican Jerusalem. It was now official. Abu Dis is a city across the valley from the Al-Aqsa Mosque. A little bridge was going to be built, and that way the Palestinians would have their capital in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. This was signed in Paris 11 days before the Rabin assassination took place. This was the go-ahead for Shimon Peres to murder Yitzhak Rabin. It came from the Vatican.
Well, now, Barry, why would the Vatican want to murder Rabin?
Well, that's easy enough. Rabin wanted out of their damn peace process. Now, all the other stuff that I've written stands true. Rabin wanted out of the suicide. And when he wanted out of the suicide, the Vatican didn't get their way. Rabin and Peres...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. All right. This is Dr. Stan. And it's Barry's contention that Peres actually engineered the murder of Rabin. And, of course, remember that certainly Barry's done a very, very good job of convincing a lot of people, including me, that... we've never been told the true story of the murder of Yitzhak Rabin. But it's contention that really the reason Peres had done this was because the Vatican... Well, what did the Vatican want out of this other than perhaps to have the Palestinians be able to have a state or a national capital very, very close there or within the Holy City?
Is that the answer before the question?
No, that's what I'm asking. Is that right, or did I get it wrong?
No, I mean, that's approximately right. Remember, the Vatican viewed Jerusalem as theirs. And let's not fool around with that concept that the capital of Roman Catholicism is Jerusalem. It became the official capital in Muslim circles when Charlemagne captured Western Europe for the Vatican to give them a military power. But this is a fact. And in fact, the Holy Roman Empire of the Germanic nation actually sat in Jerusalem. Frederick Barbarossa, king of the Vatican, was the king of Jerusalem. This is their capital. Let's never, ever forget they've been waiting for this moment a long, long time. Now, let's not get confused. I'm going to actually try and make this logical. What you've got also for the Rabin murder is the paymaster. Now, that is John Friedman. Now, this, again, you've got to read my books. It's not the time to do this. But John Friedman paid every penny for Rabin's last rally. He was a funnel for money. He's supposedly a wealthy French tycoon. In telecommunications, he is a funnel. And he along with Shimon Peres, paid for the security of the rally where Rabin died. It was Friedman for France and Peres worked to make sure that Rabin died their way at this rally. This I've prepared so many years now, it's boring for me to say this. So many times I've explained this. But the French connection to Peres is direct, and it's not guesswork. And finally, by the way, I mean, it's not finally, it goes on and on, but there's the fact that Carmi Gilon, who was the head of our secret services, the Shabak, on the night of Rabin's murder was in Paris, France, working with the French Secret Service, planning the post-assassination in Israel. All of this was happening. And by the way, this goes on and on. I don't want to belay this little fact. The French in Paris killed Rabin. And this I've been saying for many years. What I haven't been saying is, well, of course the Vatican were in on it then. Of course the Vatican got their assassination. And the core reason for that, again, is because the Vatican picks up East Jerusalem from Shimon Peres. At the end of the day, that's what they signed in Paris, France, the Abu Dis Agreement. If there are any historians out there who are really interested in this part of history, maybe get a hold of me. It has not been told even remotely truthfully. And I have been speaking with people who were part of Oslo, and they told me what happened. The Rabin assassination happened because Rabin no longer wanted to stay the course of Oslo. Rabin was opening his mouth, and he was not just exposing one of the two halves of the world secret government, that being the Vatican and their business group, the Bilderbergers. Rabin was also opening his big mouth about the Council on Foreign Relations, and he was talking about Kissinger's role with Netanyahu and how the CFR controlled both sides of the Knesset. He was doing this publicly, and I was watching, absolutely astounded, as Rabin opened his mouth. I'll give you a little example. I was invited. I had a book in England. It was quite a hit. It was called The Fall of Israel. The Economist made it their lead review. Every major review in Britain did serious reviews of this book of mine. So I was in London just talking about my research. I believe it was 1995, just before Rabin was murdered. It was September 95. I was on the biggest Jewish radio show Sunday morning, and I started saying, people, this Oslo Accord was given to us by the Council on Foreign Relations. And then I started reading off the names, and then the phone started ringing at this radio station, and I was ordered off the air. The radio station was ordered to pull me off the air. The announcer would not play ball, and he let me go right to the end, and he says, you think we don't know about the Trilateral Commission here? You think we don't know all this? Good for you. He was a great announcer. But even in the middle of a radio interview in London, people were trying to hush up this fact that Yitzhak Rabin was opening his mouth on Israeli television, and he was saying that, well, Netanyahu phoned Kissinger yesterday and offered a new stance on the Golan, and Kissinger told him not to bother him, he was busy right now. This he was talking like it was the most natural thing in the world. I don't know if Israelis understood what Rabin was saying, but I understood that Kissinger controlled not just the government of Israel, but also the opposition. Now, this left a big question. Who is running Israel? And the answer is very straightforward. Well, it's not so straightforward, but for the time being, the Anglo-Saxons, the Protestants, are still fighting the Vatican, led by the Jesuits. It's still the old-fashioned war. This is still going on in this world, where the Roman Catholic Church want to be the only true church, and they're still funding the Illuminati to bring down Protestantism. And by the way, they've done a brilliant job. In Europe, nobody goes to church anymore in Europe. They've done an amazing job with the Church of England. They've turned it into a Marxist Boy Scout. They've done a great job in destroying Protestants throughout Europe. Give them credit. The other side are the Anglo-Saxons. And this is the Council on Foreign Relations. And as I have explained before, the Council on Foreign Relations are run by former Jews called Sabbateans or Frankists. These are the people, believe it or not, they were once Jews. They are today Protestants. The Rothschilds brought in their agents in the 19th century. They brought in Astor, and they brought in Schiff, and they brought in Beaumont. They all converted. They all became Protestants. None of them are Jews anymore. But on weekends, they're Sabbateans. And that's who controls the Council on Foreign Relations. And it's too hard to explain in depth. I'll only do that if you ask me to.
Well, I think, Barry, for a lot of our listeners who have never heard the term Sabbatean or don't have any idea who Sabbati was, why don't you go ahead? Because I really think that's important. I just would mention one thing. You mentioned Oslo. This was the Oslo Accord. The Oslo negotiations, which were forced on Israel, that forced them to make concession after concession after concession to undermine the very foundation of the Jewish state. I mean, it was a disaster. And their leaders were forced to accede.
In an interview with William Sapphire, also CFR, go figure it, of the New York Times, Rabin said, "I did not want to get into Oslo. It wasn't my idea. I met Bush in Kennebunkport, Maine on September 17, 1992, and he told me, from here on in, you prepare the Israeli public for very serious sacrifices. You will begin negotiations with the PLO." And then Oslo began in November, and it's complicated. I interviewed one of the two writers of Oslo, Israeli writers, Ron Pundak. Maybe we'll get into that later. The core of the matter is the Oslo Accord was shoved down Yitzhak Rabin's throat by George Bush, the father, and I have the exact quote. That is my book, Traitors and Carpetbaggers in the Promised Land. I have a few left. One I sent to you, and email me, and if you're first to email me, you'll get a copy of the book. This is early research on the conspiracy. Now, what I'm trying to say, and this is important because we can cover amazing ground tonight, is the business with the Vatican led to the murder of Rabin directly. Now, we talked about this last time, and it's been bothering me, and I think we should talk about it again. Leah Rabin has to, by Jewish law, cannot travel for 30 days, 1 month. On the 31st day, she got in an airplane and traveled to meet the Pope.
Now, this is Rabin's widow.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, look, he's not a guy who gives good consolation. The last thing you want is the Pope, John Paul II, giving you consolation because your husband died. What was she doing in Rome? Now, I said to you it had to have been a threat because at that point the country was very close to blaming Shimon Peres for the murder. At that point, the name Avishai Raviv, if you don't know the name, just forget it and follow along with me. Those who do know the name will know that the tie between Yigal Amir, the supposed killer, and the Shabak, through his buddy Avishai Raviv, was now exposed throughout the country. They were one or two steps away from getting to Paris. Maybe two. I hear music.
You do? Well, we'll be back here in just a moment. Our guest this evening is Barry Shamish. This is a fascinating story. It's the sort of thing that goes on behind the scenes that you're not going to hear from regular sources. But the world is run by far different powers than those who are not part of the inner circle can ever suspect, said the man to Coningsby. Go right ahead.
One step was Carmi Gilon. That would be our J. Edgar Hoover. He was the head of the Shabak, the Shin Bet, our secret services. After that was Paris. After that, he was the one who gave the order for the murder, and he was going crazy. The Pope was his big daddy. The Pope was the boss of Simon Peres. The Pope must have told Leah Rabin, do not expose our man Simon. Don't do it. That is the only explanation I can come up with. And by the way, I've been hammering at this now for several days. There's no other reason for her to be forced to go to Rome on the first open day she's allowed to travel to meet the Pope. It must have been a very important message for her to go to Rome. Now, again, there have been so many meetings with the Pope and the PLO and Shimon Peres. You buy my book, it's called Save Israel. It's a big, fat book, over 400 pages. Again, go to lulu.com and type in my name under search, C-H-A-M-I-S-H. The only way you can follow the boring stuff is to actually read 400 pages of the Pope meeting this Israeli Prime Minister. I'll give you an example. Last week, he met C.P. Livni, our foreign minister. This week, he meets 19, not the Pope this time, now it's King Juan Carlos, I'm sorry. The Pope's ambassador to Spain, the guardian of the holy sites of Jerusalem, first meets Israel's foreign minister, then sits down with 19 Arab foreign ministers and promises to get rid of Israel. This is what's going on with the Vatican. They have promised the Arabs that Israel will not be long for this world, and they, right now, have only one thing stopping them, and that's the Protestants. That's the other side to this New World Order. Now, this is where the fights start getting very, very interesting. Now, when I started thinking about this, about the show tonight, I made this business about Peres, and it's so important that you hear me out about this. Israel, I believe it was the year 2001, I believe. Our ambassador to Peres, France, Benjamin Ben Elisar, was murdered. Now, in Peres, in the hotel of the Israeli embassy. Now, here's the story of this amazing murder. And by the way, to be in politics in Israel, and to be on the right especially, means you're going to be murdered. Okay, this is the way it goes in Israel. Ben Elisar was a very decent man. He was a very close protege of Menachem Begin. He did a lot of foolish things as well, but he was a genuine Jew. Now, here's what the government told us happened. One Friday morning, Ben Elisar appeared at the embassy's hotel with two male hookers, and he took them into his room where he died in a sadomasochistic orgy. This, believe it or not, is the story the government spread throughout Israel. Here's the real story. Ben Elisar discovered a little too much.
Hold that thought for just a minute, because we're going to bring our other stations on board, and I want them to hear it. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is talking about a Jewish patriot, a very decent man, who, of course, we're told had taken two hookers to his hotel room and died in a sadomasochistic orgy, but that isn't the real reason. Here was a man like Israel, like Barry, who feels very, very deeply about his country, and obviously this was another example of somebody who's trying to get the truth out and protect their country, who was murdered. So what really happened to him? First of all, what was his name and what happened to him?
Well, Ben Elisar, Benjamin Ben Elisar.
All right.
And they were homosexual hookers. The story wasn't just hookers. What happened is he died. That's for sure, he died. The question is, what did he die of? Now, here's what really happened. Ben Elisar discovered something big. I assume it was the Rabin assassination. But keep in mind that Peres, Shimon Peres, has been using the city of Peres for many decades to do his criminal deeds. That's where he met the likes of Mark Rich, and Bruce Rappaport and all his criminal friends over the many years was in Paris, and he spread that crime through the Clinton administration, who pardoned Mark Rich and so forth. But the Rabin assassination must have been a huge operation, because Ben Elisar discovered something very big, and there was a meeting held in Paris. The meeting was held 2 days before Ben Elisar was murdered. The meeting was between Chirac and Ehud Barak and Ben Elisar. It was a private meeting where Ben Elisar spilled the beans about Rabin. I'm sure it was Rabin. Ehud Barak returned to Israel and ordered 6 people fired. They were all members of David Levy's former team at the foreign ministry. It doesn't matter. He ordered Ben Elisar on the next plane home. He was fired. Ehud Barak tried to save his life. He did his best. Ben Elisar the next morning was murdered. He was murdered in a way that only the Parisians can do. All his policemen were abandoned. He had no protection. There were no Shabak agents either. He walked into the hotel where he was beaten to death. That is the death of Ben Elisar. Now, of course, that could be found out, because the story was so damn stupid that a man of his dignity would bring in 2 homosexual hookers into the embassy's hotel. But it got worse, because shortly after that, they burnt down the embassy in Paris. The Israeli embassy, 4 stories tall, the biggest embassy in Western Europe, burns to the ground. Now, try and imagine, because this is the scenario that we were painted. The ambassador, who is no longer Ben Elisar, he is dead. The new ambassador is going to close shop for the night. So he closes the main door of the embassy and looks for his key, and then he locks the embassy shut and goes home for the evening, with nobody inside the embassy watching a thing. I mean, this is just plain stupid. The embassy is filled with security people all the time. It's the most heavily guarded embassy in Western Europe. But that night, why, it burnt to the ground. And it gets even weirder, because the fire went out. It took about 4 hours to burn this embassy to the ground. At about 2:30 in the morning, the fire went out. They actually ordered a new fire started. Now, guess how the fire started? It was an electric short. An electric short brought down the 4-story embassy, Israeli embassy in Paris, France, about 4 months after Ben Elisar was murdered. They're trying to wipe out all the crimes that Shimon Peres has perpetrated in that city. This man is so dastardly that people can't imagine that he could be so busy. Now, keep in mind, he's going to take over Israel, and he now has 2 choices. If Ehud Olmert goes down because of his various scandals, and I won't go into the 9/11 one quite yet, maybe later we will, or if Katsav goes down. Now, this is more important, because Katsav was sent to the Pope last January. I'll talk about that after the music ends.
All right, fine. Well, of course, is he the fellow who the president of Israel who's actually been accused of raping 5 or 6 women, something of that sort?
Yep.
And this is the most ridiculous story, and yet, of course, this story's come out. He's been forced to resign, and at least step down for the time being, while they're investigating him for raping 6 women. And you certainly don't really believe there's any truth to this story, do you?
Let's put it this way. Other presidents have done much, much worse, and their crimes were covered up. So let's start at that minimum.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Shamus. We're talking about the tragic politics of Israel today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Barry, go ahead and tell the story now.
Moshe Katsav was sent to Rome to negotiate the hegemony, the passing of real estate from Mount Zion to Rome, not renting, actual giving deed to land in Jerusalem. Now, of course, it was a stupid deal to begin with. And as it was explained to me, and I explained on our last show, they were after the Last Supper Room. The Last Supper Room became the basis of the Roman Catholic Mass. It's based on death. It's not a nice service in the least. They have their reasons. Their reasons are occultic. This is beyond our understanding right now. What we do understand is Katsav said no. He's not going to give away the hegemony, the sovereignty of any part of Israel to the Vatican. And now, lo and behold, he's fighting off the claims of six women. And I read how they got these women. Boy, they had to scrape the bottom of the barrel to get these women to say anything. But the fact remains the same. Don't fool with the Vatican.
Well,
they are really vicious.
I think for our listeners, they have to understand that the area that that Barry is talking about is out on Mount Zion. It's just outside of the walls of Israel, there of the holy city, and it is a building that has this large room. It's called the Last Supper Room. I don't think it's really the place of the Last Supper, but it's a very distinguished and important place, certainly on Mount Zion there, basically, there's several buildings in that region, and this is one of the most important ones. David's tomb is there. At least they claim it's David's tomb, and they have this big replica where David supposedly is buried. But why does the Vatican want that spot? Why is that so important? And why would they want a permanent claim to that spot adjacent to the Holy City?
Well, as I said, it became their mass. It's an occultic site. The most important site is the Roman Catholic Mass. They have their reasons, but again, that's not important for us.
All right, fine.
Important for us is that Peres can become president of Israel and after the next election. Now that Katsav is gone, Peres walks in. Listen, don't forget something. Katsav beat Peres. There was a race between Katsav and Peres. It was a secret vote, and Peres was thrown out. And Peres is not a guy who likes to be defeated.
Hold up, though. We'll be back in just a moment here. All right. Well, our guest this evening is Barry Shamish, and Barry is talking about how the president of Israel today is facing charges for supposedly sexually assaulting six women. The president is Olmert is certainly very much disliked and on very, very shaky ground. It would certainly, if the vote were to come up tomorrow, why he would lose, and that leaves Peres. And of course, Peres is the man who wants to become the next leader of Israel, and everything looks like he's going to succeed. And it's Barry's contention that he has made a secret deal with the Vatican to pass over this property on Mount Zion to the Vatican that wants the property for occultic reasons. So pick up the story from there.
Well, I don't know if they would call it occultic.
Well,
I mean, they would view it as a one-world government and a one-world religion and all this spirit now coming once again from the Pope and no more of this nonsensical Protestantism. They would view it within their realms of normality. Now, remember, the Vatican live on terror. The Vatican live on scaring people to death. They live on inquisitions. They live on crusades. The Vatican is the most evil organization. It's the Roman Empire. I mean, it's that simple. The Roman Empire didn't disappear. It became the Roman Catholic Church. And the same evil that the Romans foisted on the world, the Roman Catholic Church, does even better. It's spread every which way. Now, this is where we run into a problem with Israel. Now, I have done the story, and I may do it once again. Shall we go over the meeting that took place in Jerusalem in 1898?
You go right ahead.
This is the most important meeting, that political meeting that probably took place in modern history. That's how important it is. Now, hear me out, people. Let's summarize. Summary number one, the Vatican were behind the murder of Yitzhak Rabin, and they have been protecting Shimon Peres ever since that murder. We have not touched on the latest murders, including Rabin's anesthesiologist, including... we haven't done that. But that's part one. Now, part two. Why is the Vatican so involved on the inside of Israel? And what does it want? And now we go to 1898. The Kaiser Wilhelm. Kaiser Wilhelm, okay, was in Jerusalem. And how do we know? Well, I guess his Batman must have told somebody. That's a joke. For those of you who don't understand that, it was a funny joke. Leave it at be. Kaiser Wilhelm came to Jerusalem in 1898. He brought an entourage with him, which included the Batman, and leave it at that. Now, you've got to understand how on earth anybody would come to Jerusalem in 1898. Remember, it's the worst tourist destination in the whole wide world. You're talking about a place where, first of all, to arrive there, you don't take a luxury liner. Okay, you're not floating on the next generation of Titanic. You take a tramp steamer, you get off at Jaffa, you hire a donkey train, you hope it's well armed enough that you don't get killed, and then finally you get to Jerusalem, where there's maybe a comfortable place for you to stay if you've got a church or a hospital there. The Germans didn't. That's why Kaiser Wilhelm went all the way to Jerusalem. He consecrated three churches. Now, this is very important because one of the churches was on the best land in all of Jerusalem. It was on Mount Zion. It's called the Domitian Abbey. And the Domitian Abbey has some background. Now, when Charlemagne finally created a military wing of the Vatican in Europe, he built his first cathedral. It was in a place called Aachen, Aachen. In 1898, Kaiser Wilhelm presented plans for the new church on Mount Zion, approximately 50 yards away from the land they're trying to get right now from Israel. It was the most daring cathedral in the city. You can see it from anywhere. It's on top of Mount Zion. He now declared that Mount Zion and the holy parts of Jerusalem were in Vatican hands. This was a major, major statement. Now, this was pretty good, and it's almost worth the trip. Let's say it was worth the trip. It doesn't seem to be, really, because he could have been killed, but someone else was in there in Jerusalem. Someone else followed Kaiser Wilhelm. Someone else also took a tramp steamer and a donkey caravan up to Jerusalem. And on November 2nd of 1898, he had a meeting with Kaiser Wilhelm. Now, in my book, Schepeitz v. Labor Zionism and the Holocaust, go to lulu.com or visit my website, theberrychamishwebsite.com. Just go in there and look at my old archives. You can see the documents. www.theberrychamishwebsite.com. What you're looking at is an expression of grief on the part of Kaiser Wilhelm. He rebuffed the father of modern Zionism, Theodor Herzl. Now look, people, you can talk political movements all you want, but in the middle of Jerusalem, the holiest city to the Vatican, it was the capital of the world for the Vatican, you have got the ruler of the largest country in Western Europe, the Kaiser Wilhelm, meeting the father of modern Zionism, who, by the way, is back to the hilt by monies from the Rothschilds and the Hirsches and other families in Europe. He's a powerful guy, and he is rebuffing him. Now, think about what rebuffing means. Theodore Herzl did not get on that donkey and climb up that horrible pass from Jaffa to Jerusalem to be rebuffed. What he wanted was a state. He wanted the Jerusalem state in Palestine. And when Kaiser Wilhelm said no, you can be sure that he had expected Kaiser Wilhelm to say yes. That's what he was expecting. But Kaiser Wilhelm gave him a very different message. Kaiser Wilhelm says, sorry, I just signed an alliance with the Turkish Empire. Germany and the Ottomans are now allies. And that was not the message that Herzl wanted to hear. Now, what happens after that is quite astounding. The first thing, Herzl returns to England, and he meets the big English scientists, including Lord Balfour, and Chaim Weizmann, and all these horrible people who were going to get their state in Palestine on behalf of British Zionism, or something called British Israel. It was a movement of Zionism, and Church and Peter Herzl tells them, it can't be done, people. You're now fighting the Ottoman and the German empires. It's too frightening an alliance. We can't defeat them. It'll take millions of people to defeat them. Well, that was the end of Herzl. He died. Now, I was told, every Jew was told, that he worked himself to death. He worked so hard he had a heart attack or something. Nonsense. Go in the internet and you will find that he did not have a heart attack. He was put into a Paris sanatorium and he never came out again. After a few weeks, he died and nobody knows of what. And I claim, and I admit, I don't have the proof, but I do have a pattern already. I claim that it was Theodor Herzl who was the first political murderer of Zionism. The second one was Yaakov Dahan. I'm not going into the Dahan murder of 1923. It's not the time. Theodor Herzl was the first murderer. He was knocked off. The British took over Zionism. From that point on, after a slight hiatus, Chaim Weizmann took over the Jewish agency. Chaim Weizmann became king of the Zionists. Chaim Weizmann was a Sabbatean. He just despised Jews who did not accept Shabtai Tzvi as the Messiah or Jacob Frank. And Chaim Weizmann, in 1936, at the Zionist conference in Basel, Switzerland, told the meeting, there may be 2 million people who will survive the upcoming Holocaust, that they'll be strong and good for Palestine. He knew the Holocaust was coming. He knew because he cut a deal with the Nazis. It was called the Transfer Agreement. I have written about this long and hard, but the labor Zionists, these are the peacemakers. These are the people who hate the religious. These are the people who are going to destroy Israel. These are the people who push the Jews out of Gush Katif. This is Ariel Sharon, was always a non-Jewish Sabbatean, and people think he was a powerful right-winger. He made a deal with Kissinger in 1974 to destroy the right-wing, the Herut, my Zionism. The Zionism of Jabotinsky and Begin were banned from the Jewish agency in 1933 because someone named Chaim Arlozorov, another murder, happened in Tel Aviv. They were falsely accused of it, and that was it. Only one kind of Zionism now controls the Jews of the world, labor Zionism. They cut a deal with the Nazis. The Nazis would send German Jews to Palestine. The German Jews would only buy Nazi goods. This was called the Transfer Agreement. From here on in, the Jews of Europe would die, and you can thank in no small part the labor Zionists, the Bolshevik Zionists, the Sabbatean Zionists, and I'll give you only one reason. According to Sabbatean or Frankist Zionism, the Torah is wrong completely. The Torah is right in the opposite sense. Therefore, do not adulter means adulter like a little bunny. And do not kill means you kill and you get great physical satisfaction from killing Jews who do not accept the real Messiah. There are two of them, Sabbatai Zvi or Jacob Frank. These people have infiltrated Judaism. This is what the Jews don't like about what I'm saying. Judaism has been infiltrated by people who hate the Jews. They despise the Jews. Right now in this world, there's only 12 million Jews left. It was the Sabbateans who built up conservative Judaism from Germany to England to America. Reform Judaism from Germany to England to America. Communism from Germany to England to South America via the Jesuit communes and later to Russia. All of this is happening because only three nations are at war with each other. And they became at war with each other officially on November 2nd, 1898 in Jerusalem when Kaiser Wilhelm said no to Theodor Herzl. The three nations are Germany. That's the founder of the Donner Party. They are the promulgators of Sabbatai Zvi and Sabbateanism. That is Turkey. Turkey, Ottoman Empire, nation one, nation two, Germany. They had an alliance with the Ottoman Empire. Nation three, England. England fought, as Protestants should, against the German Vatican alliance. What it all comes down to is the Vatican of Southern Europe versus the Protestants of London. But then you have to go into what is Freemasonry and what became of these different Protestants and what became of these different Catholics. That's for another time. But I'm trying to tell you the most important meeting in history happened in Jerusalem. Now here's what happened as a result of it. In 1906, the three churches were finished, including Dormition Abbey. Britain received a gift from the Sultan of Turkey, all of the Sinai Peninsula. And by the way, if you think Egypt ever owned the Sinai, you're wrong. The Turks gave it to the British, and the British tacked it on to Egypt. All that stuff, all the torture we went through to get the Sinai back was because of this agreement that didn't happen in 1898. Then in 1910, well, the Sabbateans hit Turkey, and hit Turkey very hard. A Sabbatean named Atartu and his Sabbatean followers. The Turkish government is Sabbatean. They destroyed the Sultan of Turkey. In 1910, the young Turks took over Turkey. It was a Sabbatean revolution. No more Sultan of Turkey. Within 2 years, they had slaughtered 1.5 million people, Armenians. And that was just the dry run for the real Holocaust, which was going to happen in the next World War. We had 20 million die in the First World War, 60 million in the next World War, endless heartache worldwide between the World Wars, and now we're getting prepared for something extremely bad. I don't know how many people are going to die, but 6 million more Jews are up for another Holocaust. That's all that concerns me right now, are my people. They are up for another Holocaust in Israel. When those missiles start hitting, there'll be nowhere for the Jews to run. Nowhere.
And
did I sum that up? Did that make sense?
Yeah, I can follow up point by point by point. And certainly as we read about what's happening over there, why we find that Hezbollah is beginning a very, very sophisticated missiles from both Russia and Iran. And, of course, they're in turn getting them from Syria and Iran. And certainly a lot of these are coming Russian-made. So, and then, of course, they're rearming the people, the Hamas and Fatah. And although they're fighting between themselves, eventually they will unite against Israel as well. And there's no possible way that Israel can withstand this pressure from around them, especially no. When their leaders are intent upon betraying the nation.
Their leaders are Sabbatean. Now, again, I don't blame the Jews for not wanting to understand this concept. But our nation has been infiltrated. there should be 80 million Jews in the world today. If you look at the last 120 years at the assimilation, at the conservative and reform synagogues, at the Holocaust, at the pogroms, we are down to just 12 million of the 80 million we should be. They're destroying Judaism. There are not going to be Jews in a generation or two. Now, this people, if you want an Israel, and by the way, I think a lot of people are going to be very, very, very disappointed if this Israel goes.
Hold that thought. We're going to have to go to a quick break here. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Shabbos. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Barry Shamish, and I want you to hear his views, his interpretation of history, because it's fascinating, and certainly many of these things most people have never heard of in the relationship between Theodor Herzl and the Kaiser Wilhelm, the meeting in 1898, and, of course, the Sabbatean influence and really domination over the Jewish state today. And there is no question in my mind that Israel is being set up to be destroyed. Of course, I think that God is going to play a part in what happens, but we live in exciting time. Barry, you've got to go ahead. You've got about 2.5 minutes to finish up this segment of the program.
All right, I got a big surprise for you in the next segment.
All right,
I always pull up my big guns for the Dr. Stan show. I'm going to do where Paris and Balin, by the way. Balin's a sly son of a bitch. He's a nasty person. And again, if I were in Israel and there was any hope of a political movement, I would go against Balin before Paris. But neither here nor there, I'm going to talk about the nasty black ops that Israel and Shimon Peres specifically have been playing against the United States to play out this little war again between the Sabbateans or the Anglo-Saxons, to make your life simpler, of the CFR versus the Jesuits of the Vatican or the Bilderberg, their business partners. And we're going to look that there is this push-pull all the time. They do not get along perfectly. Now, what's been happening right now in Israel is there's no question whatsoever. Condoleezza Rice is doing what the Vatican tells her to do. It's that simple. They're working together. Now, this Rice is not a very bright woman, and she's starting to look dumber and dumber every day. But you can see right in front of your eyes, whenever the Vatican demands something of Israel, and lately it has been no more roadblocks. Well, there's Condoleezza Rice showing up in Jerusalem and saying no more roadblocks. You can see the meeting that she had in Rome, Italy, after the Lebanon War last summer to get the Vatican troops into southern Lebanon. There they are, the troops of Italy, Spain, France, and Germany. They are the troops of southern Lebanon.
All right, hold
now
that.
They want them in Gaza.
Hold
they're
that,
working
hold
hand
that
in hand now.
Barry, hold the thought. We'll be back here in just a moment as we wrap up this segment of the program. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time, and I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family and support us in helping us. If you'd like to get a tape or a CD of this program, and remember that when we go to the breaks, why Barry and I do continue talking, so you're not hearing the whole program. But if you want to order the whole program, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Barry, I want you to give your web page one more time so people can know how to get in touch with you.
To buy the books, and by the way, they're $10 to download, and they're right in front of your eyes. You go to lulu.com, that's www.lulu.com, write in my name, Chamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, And you'll get to my books.
All right,
my website is TheBarryChalmersWebsite.com, www.TheBarryChalmersWebsite.com, and you can hear lots of radio interviews, including this one eventually.
Okay, fine. Well, then certainly posted there, and we'll have this one posted on our website. But go to Barry's website, and you're certainly welcome to pull down and your copy, as far as I'm concerned, I don't object to your copying and getting them into other people's hands so they can begin to go understand what's going on.
What other way is there?
Well, certainly we need to get people to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle, and behind so much of what's going on are these powerful religious forces, and they're working through all of our major religions, through the Protestant faith, to the Catholic faith, and certainly within the Jewish faith, and it's really not a Jewish faith, it's a different faith. And most people have never heard of the Sabbateans. You can go to the Encyclopedia Britannica and look them up. They're a very real force, and certainly there's been a small number of Jewish people who've recognized this, but most Jews have no idea what's going on, and I really seriously fear that we're going to see a third world war coming, and there are going to be terrible, terrible consequences for Israel and for the Israeli people as a result of that. Well, if you'd like, of course, to get some material from my ministry, our website is www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can go there. You can actually look at all the four tape sets and the videos and the books we have that all have the same basic theme. There's a spiritual battle going on today, which most people don't recognize. You can actually listen to our programs there. They're available on the Internet. Of course, we're on the AmericanNewsNet.com website at 7 o'clock every morning, on GenesisOnline.com at 3 o'clock Pacific in the afternoon, and then 4 to 5 and 8 to 10 every evening at RadioLiberty.com at Pacific time. You can actually pull the programs down. They are live. They're also available archived for 6 weeks, and they're on MP3. And so we're doing everything we can to give you the opportunity to listen. Some people, certain parts of the country, it gets pretty late in the last hour or two of our programming, and so they are there. We want you to pull them down. We want you to get other people listening. Unfortunately, the media in America is controlled by 5 mega corporations. That's covered in a book we carry called The New Media Monopoly by Professor Ben Bagdakian, his professor in Berkeley, who's been following the control of the media since 1983. It's a fascinating book, fascinating insight into why the American people are as blind as the Israeli people are today. But we are an alternative, and we have a much, much different perspective, and we're fortunate to have a guest like Barry and those others that you hear here on Radio Liberty on a regular basis. There are a lot of the programs out there that, of course, have, the latest issue of the day, the cutting-edge story. We try to give you the historical perspective. We try to give you the spiritual perspective, because we think that unless you understand the spiritual perspective, you can't understand anything that's going on in the world today. Well, we ask you to pray for America and to pray for revival, because if America doesn't turn back to God, there's no hope for this nation. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Barry Sammis. And of course, I'm just going to let Barry go ahead and pick the ball up and run with it. Go ahead, Barry.
Well, we're going to go again to the war. And what does Shimon Peres, remember, the guy's 84 years old, he's set and ready to become the next prime minister or president. He's left a lot of people hurt. But the biggest scandal of all, the biggest scandal, even bigger than Rabin, at least in the United States, Iran-Contra. Now, I'm going to tell the real story of Iran-Contra, and there's one person who is at the center of it, Jonathan Pollard. Okay, let's get that straight right now. Jonathan Pollard is the reason there was an Iran-Contra. Now, here is the real story of Jonathan Pollard, and please try and follow with me. By the way, the whole story is in my book, Chapter 2 of Shabtai Tzvi, Labor, Zionism, and the Holocaust. You can find out all about Iran-Contra and how Jonathan Pollard inadvertently caused it. Now, we begin with something very simple. Jonathan Pollard was a level 2 clerk in the Naval Intelligence, and what he was doing was he was tracking boats. They would give him a world shipping where boats were supposed to be, and he would see if there was any unusual movement. And it turns out that he did find unusual movements. He found movements between Greece and Yemen, and he knew the PLO had a new base in Yemen, and he started making a few inquiries. And lo and behold, he passed the information on to Israel. And he didn't think much of it. But yes, it was the United States exchanging arms for hostages. This was the first itty-bitty attempt to get some hostages being held in Lebanon free with arms. And Peres, when he got this information, this was in July of 1984. Peres was so delighted that the United States had illegally opened up this market of arms for hostages that he said to himself, how can we get our fingers into this business? And in September, he sent three people. Note that one of the people was David Kimchi, head of the Council on Foreign Relations in Israel. He also sent Al Schremer, head of Israel Aircraft Industry, and third person, Nimrod Novik, I think. This is a hard one to remember, by the way, but neither here nor there. By September, they were now in Washington presenting their findings, not to Reagan, but to Bush. And lo and behold, there became a lot more thefts immediately afterwards. And then the project just got out of hand. Peres was now ordering a lot of arms shipped to the Iranians, and he was ordering his people to go to Iran, and in the end he got caught. When Pollard got caught, he got caught. And all of Peres' crew quit. All of them. Kimchi, Schwimmer, everybody quit. But Peres was making too much money to quit. So he got Aviram Nir to be on his side, and he and Ali North went to Tehran. And look, I'm giving this very, very slightly. It's a very complicated story. But the core comes down very, very simply. Pollard was providing the intelligence that Shimon Peres was exploiting to blackmail the Bush-Reagan administration. It's that simple.
And that's why they won't let him out of prison, ever.
That is for darn sure, but there's more to it, and we're going to get to that in a second.
All right, fine. Well, you just hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. And we do hope many of our listeners will want to get either the 2-CD set or 2-tape set of this program. You're getting an entirely different slant on history here this evening from our special guest, Barry Sammis. Okay, go ahead, Barry.
Now, let me give a little background to Pollard. Right now, there's a movement. Where are they getting their money from? Where are these Pollard people getting their money from? They're the only right-wing movement that is constantly doing rallies. Now, last week, I saw a real trouble. There's a guy in Koch. His name is Mike Radofsky. He is an agent. He has been caught doing terrible things in the past. I'm not going to go through it. It's none of my business. But he was the one leading the rallies for Jonathan Pollard. Now, look, there's only one reason for a thing like that. The more radical your advocate, the stupider you look. If you want to take a political person out of the arena, you get the most radical people and have them lie down in the middle of the street for you and get the world news, and that's it. You're branded. You're finished. One of the major methods to get rid of any issue in Israel, Pollard used to be, for instance, a national issue. Pollard never wore a kippah. Pollard wasn't religious. He was doing it, he actually believed, to help Israel. He didn't realize how crooked the Shimon Peres was, and to this day he probably doesn't realize that. But that's what happened. His information was abused by Shimon Peres, who blackmailed the Bush regime. It led to Iran-Contra, but it led to much, much more. And we'll get to that. But you have to realize there are people who are no longer satisfied with the results from Jonathan Pollard's camp. Right now, all you see are Israelis who used to be pro-Pollard, which is all of the population, reduced to a tiny little population of people in the Koch movement. And that's what you do when you want to make sure an issue never, ever, ever gets solved. Make it look like you're fighting for the guy, but doing everything psychologically to make sure he never sees the light of day again. And that's what they're doing right now in Pollard. But here's the reason why. And also from the American side, Pollard was looking in Baghdad. And this, by the way, in my book, I have all the sources. These are official government sources, the works. Pollard found a chemical plant built by the Bechtel Corporation in downtown Baghdad. He turned that over to Peres, and this time Peres went nuts. Peres blackmailed Bechtel. When you blackmail Bechtel, you were blackmailing Schultz and Weinberger. And who was the other? Schultz, Weinberger, and, oh my goodness, the other really big
hold
one.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry was just saying that one of the crimes, that one of the things that that Jonathan Pollard had done, he found that there was a large plant that had been built in downtown Baghdad by Bechtel Corporation, and he reported that to Peres. Well, of course, Bechtel is George Shultz, and it's Caspar Weinberger, and I don't know, was Baker at all in on that? Or?
No. But you know what? I'm not going to go looking through my book right now. But these were very top-notch people. They were all involved with Bechtel Corporation. And somehow, Shimon Peres had the goods on them. Now, here's the next stage. Peres ordered the Bechtel people. Now, get this. This is real in a sense that you can relate to it, because Edwin Meese had to quit as the American Attorney General because he accepted the bribe. Peres brought Edwin Meese a bribe that we will not harm. Now, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt with one other thing. Iran wanted to ship its oil through the Gulf of Eilat. Now, there was a war going on, and Iran had blocked off the Persian Gulf, and Syria had blocked off the Mediterranean. So they wanted Bechtel to build this pipeline to Aqaba, Georgia. In comes, if that's true, that's how we heard it. In comes Peres, goes to the Bush administration and says, "Yes, you can build the pipeline, but it will cost you $700 billion every year. You will put $70 billion into the coffers of the Labor Party of Israel, the Sabbatean Party. Every year you will do this for 10 years, and even in war, even if the oil is being used to bomb Tel Aviv to smithereens, we will not bomb that pipeline." That's the deal. Now, when that deal came out, and you can actually thank the Los Angeles Times for this, Edwin Meese was finished. That was the reason why Edwin Meese had to quit the Reagan government, because he accepted the bribe. Nothing happened to Shimon Peres. Nothing. Except for one thing. Nobody asked the question, where did he get the money to blackmail the Bush administration of $700 billion? And by the way, go onto your internet, write Edwin Meese, Bechtel Pipeline, and just have fun. This was actually taking place, if you can believe it. Now we've got, and I say that, if you can believe it, now you've got Peres, who has really expanded Iran-Contra now. Now it's not just arms for hostages. Now you ship Israeli arms to Iran. The Israeli arms becomes money. The Iranians pay money. In the end, they saw like 18 Hawk missiles. They didn't get much for it, but they paid for it in money. The money went to Central America, where Israelis took over the coke trade. The coke trade of Noriega was run by two Jews. And you know, I used to know one of them. He was an American guy. I actually knew him. All of this has faded a bit in memory. At the time, it was Michael Klein was one of them. He was one of the Jews. In short, Peres now turned Iran-Contra into a simple operation of trading and arms for hostages, into trading arms for money, money for cocaine, and then the cocaine, now get this, it was shipped into the United States, and the money was laundered at the bank discount branch in Miami, Florida, and then shipped back to Israel. This insanity was the real Iran-Contra. This was never investigated. But something was investigated. After Peres' crew quit, including David Kimchi, head of the Council on Foreign Relations in Israel, again, somebody should be outside his door to ask him what he'd been doing with his council all his life. Nonetheless, they all quit in Peres. But Amiram Neer, who is the son-in-law of the publisher of Israel's biggest paper, Yediot Achronot, I say that because it's too important to miss. Well, he becomes Peres' anti-terrorism advisor, and he meets Colonel North in Tehran. And believe it or not, he actually picks up a cake from a bakery in Tel Aviv to give the mullahs a nice piece of Tel Aviv cake. And all of a sudden, Peres has got his boy, Amiram Neer. Now, Amiram Neer returns to Tel Aviv, and the heat is now on thick. There are now congressional hearings, and Amiram Neer has decided to come clean. Amiram Neer has decided that he will, in fact, testify to Congress. Shimon Peres ordered him to clear out his desk. Without a moment's notice, he said, clear out your desk. Amiram Neer flew to Mexico. I don't want to go into his new business. They gave him a business harvesting avocados. He was in a plane crash, and well, he was the only one who died in the plane crash. There was a Mossad woman from Hamilton, Ontario. She was one of the people who survived. The pilot and his co-pilot survived. Only Amiram Neer died 3 days before he was supposed to testify at the congressional hearings on Iran-Contra. Isn't that great, huh?
What a coincidence.
Oh, Mark, now, I return. What Peres did was try to destroy the American government. He took a scandal. It wasn't much of a scandal. But he had Jonathan Pollard feeding him the information. He found out that the American government had decided to try a tiny experiment in arms for hostages. He turned it into one of the biggest scandals of the century. That was Shimon Peres. Now, if you're wondering what Pollard is doing in prison, no, he is sitting in prison for all the other crooks that Shimon Peres ran through the ringer. And Peres will never let him out. Never. Because if this guy puts two and two together, Peres is going to be the bad, bad guy of Iran-Contra.
Well, of course, the thing, you know, Barry, that bothers me is if Perez is really trying to hold up the American government and put such pressure, you know, and embarrass our government, why didn't the CIA simply take Perez out? Or does he have certainly connections that put him above, you know, the people here in this country?
Perez has got an interesting history where he's not immune. His niece was at L.A. Airport that was shot up, oh, I don't know, 6 years ago. They shot up L.A. Airport, and a young girl, 19 years old, who was looked very much like her, she was the one who died. The killer missed her by 30 seconds. She went off into a gift shop. Perez has been the target of funny stuff, but he's got Vatican protection. Never underestimate that. He has Vatican protection. Okay, now when I say that, and I'm talking about this war, there is a war, it's a secret war, neither side want to be revealed, but it really, if you want to say no more Sabbateans, and you want to forget that they have been causing the Jews all their horrible heartache, say, okay, no more Sabbateans. If you want to say no more Jesuits, and then find all the Indians of South America were not placed in communes and exploited all these years, you have it straight down to Roman Catholic versus Protestant. Well, that's not the way it goes. Something far more profound is going on. Nonetheless, you could reduce it to that if you want to. You'd be wrong. Now, I want to go into another one of these battles. Perez just about brings down Bush Reagan, and it was very, very close. Bush met Aviram Nir in the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, and Aviram Nir was about to give testimony to the U.S. Congress how much Bush knew about this operation. It would have been the end of George Bush the father. Would have been the end of him. But it didn't happen. Now, I'm going to tell you about another incident. And by the way, maybe we'll return to Iran-Contra. There's much more to say. If you think that, like, the Zionists are controlling the American government, the Vatican is controlling the American government. That is why you have a tremendous number of illegal Mexicans coming, because the Vatican wanted to turn America Catholic without much work involved. I mean, if you look at this whole thing the way I'm trying to explain it and apply it to your country, it's the exact same thing. Now, Israel is being run by the Vatican because they want Jerusalem. They want Jerusalem very, very badly. Now, I'm going to tell you about a case that should... This was the only case where I was quoted in the front pages of the British newspapers. I was quoted in Scotland on Sunday, front page. It was the murder of Alasdair Sinclair. Now, Alasdair Sinclair was murdered, I put it in my book, Save Israel, I guess it was 4 or 5 years ago. It's all in my books, so I'm not good at dates, but nonetheless, Alasdair Sinclair came to Israel from Holland, where he only stayed for 6 days. On the way out, he was stopped for no reason. The reason we were told in Israel is because he was a drug smuggler. They asked the border guards, did you find any drugs on him? And they said no. But we found a place in a suitcase where drugs could have been hidden. I said, well, if they weren't hidden, why would he confess to being a drug smuggler? The story is that Alasdair Sinclair, age 26, was taken to the jail of Ben Gurion Airport, where he hanged himself on his shoelaces. Alasdair Sinclair, his original French name was Sinclair. Sinclair. He is of the family that started the monastery in Rosedale, Scotland, the Knights Templar.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Okay, this is Dr. Stan, and That's Rosslyn Chapel, you'll be sure you're talking about there in Scotland, but go ahead, pick up the story there.
He decides what he tells his family who are in Scotland. He was in Amsterdam just playing the guitar and doing whatever an Amsterdam hippie does. But what he told his family is he was very interested in the family legacy, and he wanted to go to Israel to see the Western Wall. On the way out, he was taken to the jail. Now, number one, two bones were removed from his body by Dr. Yehuda Hiss. Never forget the name Dr. Yehuda Hiss. He was he did a partial analysis of the body.
You're talking about an autopsy, correct?
Yeah, it was a partial autopsy. He changed the autopsy of Rabin. Okay, let me live comfortably. Dr. Hiss was the one who changed Rabin's wounds. And that's why he will never get, as long as he lives, a parsing ticket. He is the doctor who takes soldiers, and he fills their bodies with broomsticks, and he fills the bodies with rags, and returns them to their parents after who knows what he did with the organs. Alistair Sinclair had two organs removed, his heart and his hyoid muscle. The hyoid bone was removed because it would prove that he didn't hang himself with his shoelace. It was pretty clear why that wasn't returned to Scotland. The heart was not so clear. The father in Scotland was a doctor. He conducted an autopsy on his son. There was no heart in the body. The Sinclair family went crazy, and they said, "Where is my son's heart and hyoid bone?" The hyoid bone, I guess, was lost, so he said, "I want the heart back." A heart was sent to him, a heart with like a third less weight than should have been for that heart cavity in Alistair Sinclair's body. Somebody stole Alistair Sinclair's heart. Now, I want to tell you something. He did nothing wrong. He was leaving the country, and somebody took him to the jail and cut out his heart. Now, there was no heart transplant the next day. I looked worldwide. What happens if you have a heart transplant is they put it in dry ice, and they get it on the next plane to the next hospital. Nothing like that happens. No operations on hearts. Alistair Sinclair was a member of the Sinclair family who built the Rosslyn Chapel in Scotland. He was the enemy of the Vatican in a way. It was the Vatican, it was Philip the Fair who took the Knights Templar and in one night arrested them all. It was the Vatican who shut them down and stole their wealth. It's the reason they ran to Scotland. Now, something happened to Alistair Sinclair's heart, and I was quoted throughout Scotland, believe me. My Scottish in-laws were not very pleased with this. I was on the front page of their weekend paper, and I said outright, I said, I've talked to lawyers. It doesn't look like we're talking about a deal in stolen body parts. It looks like they ate the heart. I said outright, I think they ate the heart.
Hold up, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're talking with Barry Shamish, and there are a lot of strange and unusual things that happen. Some of these things sound so bizarre, but of course, if you live as I do, and of course talk to the people I do, nothing would surprise you. Not even some of the rituals, some of the ritual crimes that are really carried out throughout the world. Pick the story up there.
Well, again, we can't forget the occultic side to Alistair Sinclair. To the Vatican, he is a criminal number one. The forged confessions they got out of the Knights Templar of every sexual perversion in the book, getting a Sinclair in Israel was just too tempting for someone.
Now, for our listeners who don't remember, of course, it was Jacques de Molay, who was he was the leader of the Knights Templar, who was arrested on Friday the 13th of October, 1307, and charged with heresy, and of course was eventually burned at the stake. And that was the end of the Templars, but they were an important part of this whole world occult movement that was, of course, aligned against the Vatican at that time. And that's why the Vatican had him killed. But there were many things about the Templars that really are covered in some of the books we have and some of the material we have. The Templars played an important part in history, but that was 1307. So what does that have to do with what's going on today? And this Sinclair, who died under very, very mysterious circumstances, supposedly picked up and taken to the prison where he hangs himself with his shoelaces, an innocent young man, sort of a hippie, on his way to Scotland because he just wants to see Rosslyn Chapel that was built by his relatives and completed in 1492. And here we are. What year did this young man die?
It was about 5 or 6 years ago. Again, that's in my book, Save Israel.
All right, fine. So what you're really saying, Barry, is you can't understand what's going on today unless you understand a lot of the occult background to what's taking place and the occult history that led up to what's going on in modern times.
Well, what you've got in Israel is something that's just simply not understood. You say the Vatican and they laugh at you. They think it's a hilarious joke. You're saying the Vatican. But there's a very, very strong reminder that the Vatican are involved in everything going on, and I've just covered two or three of them. You have to remember the fact that the Jewish people were killed by the Vatican rat lines. I don't know why the Jews have forgotten this. The Nazis of the world, at least 100,000 of them, were sent all over the world by the Vatican rat lines. Now, last week I quoted from a very good author, Maury. She calls herself Maury. Her website is, Within These Reflections? Oh my goodness, I forgot her website. I'm so slow tonight, long conversations. Her name is Maury. Find her. I'll do my best. The point is, I have Vaticans who write me. I have Vatican scholars who write me, and they're saying, you've got it all right. This is the real war that's taking place right now. I remind you right now of Francisco Gil White, the professor who was fired from UPenn, University of Pennsylvania, for defending the Jews. Now, he wrote an article, and I think I'm going to touch this right now. I'm going to touch the business of Ben Hecht's perfidy.
All right, before you do, for our listeners out there, the rat lines, of course, were the escape routes that the Nazis were allowed to use after the Second World War, by which large numbers went to South America. Martin Bormann, Adolf Eichmann, Klaus Barbie, Dr. Mengele, and almost 10,000 others. But it wasn't simply the Vatican, it was the CIA, MI6, and a certain portions of the Vatican were helping the Nazis to escape. Others came to North America, to the United States, and they suffered something known as Operation Paperclip. And the fact that most people have never heard of this simply is a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. If we've got a great four-tape set on Operation Paperclip, it's covered in the book The Medusa File, and of course it's covered in a book called The CIA Doctors that we carry by Dr. Colin Ross. But go ahead, Barry.
Look, I have information this week I was going to put on the show and only talk about this horrible fight going on in Israel, which is of course going to lead to the end of the country. Israel will be bombarded with Scuds. Tel Aviv will just be bouncing with Scuds. There'll be nowhere to run. Israel will not use the Samson option, and it's over with.
Hold on, we'll be right
back.
Wow. Now. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, Barry Samus. Barry, go ahead, pick the story up.
Look, I'm going to talk about something normal now. It bothered me, and then I just said, oh, to heck with it. Why should this bother me? The fact that we're going to lose another council member, we're going to lose another cabinet minister, in this case, Esterina Tartman. Now, do you know why she is no longer going to be a cabinet minister?
No, I don't.
Well, she's not going to be because she lied that she got an M.A. when she never did. She faked her curriculum vitae. Now, I'll tell you why this bothers me. Because you lose him for every type of cheating and lying. You lose them. Every single type of them. You can't keep anyone in the cabinet. They're all filthy and they're all liars. Okay, I wrote that down as a thing that just bothered me. And I also wrote down that the Mount of Olives is being totally desecrated. All its tombs are going down one by one. Graffiti, smash headstone, and nobody in the state is guarding its most important cemetery. No one. So I wrote that down as just something of a country going straight downhill. It doesn't even defend. It doesn't even defend its top cemetery. And then I've got something that bothered me so much I kind of almost exploded, because top rabbi sent personal plea to President Bush for Pollard. All right, and this makes me so disgusting. The joint letter to the U.S. President was the initiative of Rabbi Pesach Lerner, executive president of the National Council of Young Judea, and why doesn't he go suck eggs? These people don't even know why Jonathan Pollard is sitting in prison. They don't even know the absolute damage that was done for Iran-Contra. Now, here's the big one, and I'm going to say it on the air to your people who don't know that. He's not married to Esther Pollard. This was something I put out to my group, and I put it out quickly because I don't want to do personal gossip. I've never been a person who writes personal gossip. And by the way, I've collected over the years tons of sex stories and stuff that I don't use. I don't think it's right. I wouldn't be the one to report on Kassav, but what we've got...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment, and we'll let Barry elaborate. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is just saying he was very, very upset when a number of Jewish rabbis had written a letter to President Bush asking for a pardon for Pollard and saying, you know, these rabbis really don't understand why Pollard's in prison. They don't understand Pollard's relationship to Iran-Contra. And then he was mentioning that Pollard is not married to his wife.
He is not married to his wife. And the old man Bush was the one who was almost thrown out of office by Pollard. Not directly by Pollard, by Pollard's information. Now, once it was discovered that Pollard was the source of Peres' horrible blackmail, well, they did him in, but good. They really did him in. But what I've been trying to say about the wedding, I took an article. I didn't even write the article. It appeared in Haaretz magazine. And the whole thing was just so well done. And the attacks on me from the Pollard people. She is not married to Jonathan Pollard. There was never a rabbi in the prison. There was never a witness. There was never a ketubah, which is a wedding vow. There was never any wedding between Jonathan Pollard and Esther Pollard ever. Ever. And it gets much, much worse. This article delves into who Esther... That's not her real name. What's her real name? Carolyn or something. Not even her real name. She was married previous to Jonathan Pollard to a nice young man from Toronto. She would not let him see his parents or his brother or his sister. Nobody could have anything to do with her husband but herself. She was a mad woman. Esther Pollard has made sure, and I'm going to quote someone who tells me this right now, a letter I just written. Esther Pollard makes sure that Pollard will never, ever be free. Number one step, all these radicals. She's now turned it into the most right-wing. Jonathan Pollard is not religious. He never wore a kippah. That's not what happened till he married Esther Pollard. Right now, he's got only the support of the radical right in Israel. That is being done on purpose using the Kach party. That is Mike Rozovsky. That's dangerous stuff. Very dangerous stuff. But far more serious. Esther Pollard will not let Pollard be released. And I got a letter from the New Jersey Voice and Opinion. Her name was Susan. She was the editor. And she said, I was there. Congressman, or was it Senator from Connecticut, Lieberman, he said he was going to approach Clinton and get the Pollard thing done once and for all. All that was needed was a written apology, and he was out. Pollard agreed to that. Okay? In comes the wife. And the wife doesn't like it one little bit, and she orders him to rip up the apology, and that was it. He doesn't get out.
That doesn't make sense. Well, why wouldn't they want him to get out?
Because Esther Pollard doesn't want him out.
And you're suggesting, of course, it's because of her relationship to Perez. Perez doesn't want him out?
No, Esther Pollard doesn't want her out. I've explained this. She did it with the husband before. She traps her husbands and keeps them for herself.
Well,
she doesn't want him out.
It's a very strange relationship because...
It's an extremely strange relationship. All these people seem to get into very strange relationships. That goes without saying. But you've got a very, very serious problem with Pollard. If Pollard doesn't get out, you'll never know the truth about Iran-Contra ever, ever again. Now you have to consider how little things turn into big things. Now, we talked about that amazing meeting in Jerusalem where the Germans and the Turks announced that they are now allied militarily and diplomatically, and there is no point in fighting them anymore. Well, the British decided they could fight the Germans and the Turks, and they discovered something. It only cost them 20 million lives. That wasn't so bad. And then, in 1917, the British, under General Allenby, went into Jerusalem, and then, lo and behold, the British Zionists went into action. The Balfour Agreement of 1917 looked with favor on the establishment of a Jewish home in Palestine. That was a letter sent to Lord Rothschild of London. It doesn't say his first name that I can recall. And that was it. That little meeting that we discussed changed the entire world, killed 100 million people, at least killed 100 million people, and gave the Jews, or at least the Sabbateans, gave them their state in Jerusalem. It caused an awful lot of war around that, but that's what happened. That is the meeting of 1898. Never forget it. Nobody knows about it. It was probably the most important diplomatic meeting last who knows how many years.
Well, I have to admit, Barry, I'd never heard of that before, but it certainly would tend to go along with some of the other things we know.
Well, let's just write into the internet, Herzl, Wilhelm, Jerusalem, and there you got it.
Right.
It's not hidden.
No, but there's so much material up there. Fortunately, we have the internet. In fact, if I want to find things in my own monthly letters, I type in the name of my letter, what I'm looking for, and voila, it's right up on my screen.
What you've got in Israel was a war that ultimately killed, in the two wars, a good 80 million people, including probably 40% of the Jewish people, all to give these Sabbateans a state in Israel. It was a dreadful meeting. Okay? Well, now remember, and I suppose this is important We're jumping around, but I don't know. I guess every fact has its own importance. The right has been taken over. This is a message that I repeat and repeat over again and over again. The Israeli right are taken over. That's why I'm bringing up the business about Pollard. Pollard is not a right-wing person. He was never a right-wing person. As soon as he was taken over, he was doomed. And he doesn't know better. Now, I hear music?
No.
Oh, good. Now, I'm going to make a point, and why shouldn't I make this point? I went into Gaza as it was dying. I went into the homes of the Gaza people as I knew they were dying. I saw their new synagogue being put up, and I said, what are you people doing to protect us? Well, where are your barricades? Why aren't you doing anything? I did everything possible. I'm one little guy. I can't do any more than what I did. I went to Neve Dekalim. I spoke to 100 of the people. I said, people, you don't have much time anymore. Your rabbis, like Rabbi Ebener, they're not rabbis. These are people who are there to make sure that you lift up your hands in the air, walk into the boxcars, and get out of your homes. I said, your political leaders, the good ones, are dead. You're stuck with people like Bensi Lieberman, who not 2 months ago admitted in a Jerusalem court that he was working with the police hand in hand. Everything is an infiltration in Israel. Everything. And that infiltration now is to the end of the country, and there's nobody but nobody doing a thing about it. Nobody. Now, I've gone through the number of dead kids, the number of kids who were surrounding the Rabin assassination, the number of kids up for murder because they were in Ben Gvir's a massive takeover of the Palms Hotel in Gush Katif. In other words, it was a government fix. All of these people are victims of government fixes. Israel is a nightmare. You can't go there. It's too scary to go to Israel right now. They will arrest you, and they will keep you behind. And I hate to say that. That car accident I went through wasn't fun. There are also worse. There are actually worse alternatives to even that.
Well, I don't question that at all. I think we're living in difficult times. The stakes are high, and of course, I believe there is an organized effort to destroy Israel as a national state.
You know, Rabin did a very brave thing. A lot of people really like my Rabin work because I don't say bad stuff about him. And by the way, if I wanted to, there's no problem, but I don't. Now, Rabin did one thing personally. Peres was on the way to the airport where he was going to go to France and offered him some sort of deal. Rabin took his car, got to the airport, had Peres removed from the plane and said to him outright, the French are the biggest bastards. Stay away from them. And that was heard by the entire media. It was on the TV set. I was watching it. That's what he told Peres. The French are the biggest bastards. Stay away from them. Under the surface, there's good stuff going on.
Well, the good things, but of course, it was a very, very costly thing for him to take a stand against Peres at the time.
No, that was a few years. It got that way. It certainly got that way. He was building up that if Shimon Peres is number two, you know darn well that he's plotting to be number one.
Right.
Okay, that there is is given. And by the way, when he goes, don't think there'll be no one who will replace him. They're setting up Tzipi Livni. They're setting up this awful woman to replace him. So don't think that Peres goes and Israel gets fixed up. It's not like that at all.
Well, now, what about Netanyahu? What about his chances?
Oh, let's talk Netanyahu. Sure, why not? Netanyahu has been an utter puppet of the Council on Foreign Relations since at least 1974. Now, here's Netanyahu's story. Netanyahu leaves the army after the Yom Kippur War, flies to the States, and goes to MIT. at MIT, he is noticed by a very, very important guy named Ira Magaziner. Ira Magaziner was the man who set up the health program for the Clinton government. Ira Magaziner gave Netanyahu a job at First Boston Group for $150,000 a year. Netanyahu took the job. 6 months later, he quit, and he told everyone that he was going back to Israel because he got a great job opportunity. He was now selling furniture for RIM. R-I-M, he was selling tables and ottomans for RIM. Now, lo and behold, he has a conference. He actually now has a conference in Jerusalem on anti-terror. Now, he's an unknown. Remember, he's 27 years old, and he's an unknown. Who comes to his conference? Why, Richard Perle, George Shultz, George Bush the father, the entire big guys of the CFR made it to his conference.
Comes all the way over to Israel to go to his conference?
All the way to the conference. And then the conference ends, and that's it. He's back to selling ottomans and chairs and tables at RIM. But then comes 1982, which is a very good year for Benjamin Netanyahu, because in Washington, our new ambassador was Moshe Arens. Moshe Arens, who a lot of people think is in the right-wing camp, until I open up my CFR book and I show them why there is Moshe Arens on the International Advisory Committee of the CFR next to Hannah, the one from Ramallah, the Arab who used to have a giant wart on her face. It doesn't, Ashrawi. There he is. That's right. He is on the International Advisory Committee. Now, suddenly, in 1982, the ambassador to the United States, Moshe Arens, why, he declares that Benjamin Netanyahu is his new deputy. Now, I want you to know that there was a huge scandal in Israel over that. I mean, really. If you're in the foreign ministry and you've been working for the last 20 years to get the big job, and the second biggest job is deputy ambassador to the United States in Washington, well, you're going to be a little ticked off that this furniture salesman has taken a job from you. Okay, they were really upset about this. Now you've got Arons. He's in this amazing position. He has just appointed a furniture salesman from RIM to the second highest diplomatic post on the face of the earth, and he's got to explain why he did it. Now this explanation is worth gold. He says that George Shultz and George Bush recommended that I take him on because he did such a fine job organizing the terror conference. He was picked out of the conference, he was picked out of Boston Group, sent to Jerusalem. A conference was arranged for him that led to him being the deputy ambassador to the United States. After that, why, life was just a bowl of roses. Netanyahu now becomes George Shultz's closest advisor. He moves to New York, where he joins the Masons, no less, where he's involved in scandals, where he, on his Social Security files, there are three different names under his name and three different people under his name. He becomes a very close advisor to George Shultz. He becomes the spookiest darn UN ambassador any country has got, is what we've got. Now, this leads him eventually, and surprisingly, to the prime ministership of Israel. Now, please hear me out. If anyone is crazy enough to think that Netanyahu is their friend, Netanyahu becomes prime minister of Israel because they rigged the election. And by the way, boy, do I know how they rigged the election. I was in, I'll make it short. I get a phone call. The guy tells me I was in the Shabbat. His name was Yaakov forget it for now. Forget names for right now. He says, I want to come over and see all the stuff I've been reading in the newspaper that you've got on Rabin. This was right after the riot at Hebrew University in 1997. I show him my stuff. And after about 20 minutes, he puts his finger up to his mouth and goes, shh. And he starts guiding me outside. And he says, I'm not talking in your house. You know those documents are real? I said, yeah, I know they're real. He says, you know how high up this has got to go? I said, yeah, I have a pretty good clue how high up these documents have to go. He says, I'll talk to my minister. Now, he was the economic minister for Eli Yishai, the welfare cabinet minister, whatever, the minister of welfare. I get up. Oh, I hear the music.
You're hearing the music? We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Shemesh to wrap up the program.
Oh, Lord, we don't get to finish it.
You go right ahead. You got 3 minutes.
All right, very quickly. He says, you give me those documents of yours, I'll give you the biggest information of all. I give him the documents. I go into his office. He decides not to come into his office. He sends his now very famous Isaac Sudri, who is now spokesman for the Shas Party, and says, all right, they rigged the elections. They told Paris that you are not going to win the elections, you are going to lose the elections, or we spill the beans above Rabin. We expose you. Paris lost the elections by 2 percentage points, exactly what the polls said. I was guided to the attorney who showed me the exact numbers. I met a person who worked in one of the centers where they gathered the votes. They threw out 140,000 votes for Paris and let Netanyahu win. Within 2 days, he was hugging Arafat. Within a year and a half, he had signed the Y Accord in Washington. This is your Netanyahu. He's a stooge for the CFR. He's a cheat and he's a crook, just like all the rest of them. Folks, we need help in Israel. We need giant, giant help. But they've got both sides. They got both sides of us.
Well, I think that you're in the same situation we are here in the United States. Both nations certainly have common desires for peace and stability, and both nations are being betrayed by their leaders. And I believe that there's an interlock between the CFR that controls both sides here and the CFR that is controlling both sides over in Israel. But the average American doesn't believe it. The average Israeli doesn't believe it. Hopefully some of the people who listen to our programs will. Barry, it's been a fascinating 2 hours. Thank you so much for being with us. And once again, we'll be talking to you later.
A very fast 2 hours. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, our guest this evening has been Barry Shemesh. And Barry, you still there? I guess we lost Barry. But his website is thebarryshemeshwebsite.com. The Barry Shemesh website.com. Go there, pull down the information. Barry's information is well documented, but the thing is that behind everything that is going on today, whether it be in the Vatican, the CFR, or whether it be within Islam, or whether it certainly be within many of the other secret societies we talk about, are powerful spiritual forces. Their goal, a new world order, a new world religion. How is this going to come about? I fear they're going to plunge the world into a major world war in a relatively short period of time. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time I need once again to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your help to continue funding the network we have of almost 60 outlets every single week. But we can't do it without your help, so if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-544-8927. You can join the Radio Liberty family and get our 4 best CDs or tapes of the month, or certainly get our monthly newsletter. But we do hope that you'll give serious consideration to helping us as we're reaching out across America, indeed across the whole world, with what I think is a rather unique message. And we try, of course, to have regular guests that have very fascinating information. We don't necessarily agree with all of the interpretation of everybody, but I try to put on people who I think are giving you reliable information. If I don't think it's reliable, I will certainly ask questions about it, and hopefully you'll very soon learn how to interpret what's going on. And one of my greatest pleasures is when we have callers, people who call in, who can suddenly begin to think these things through all for themselves. They don't need me here, because what I'm hoping to do is to train you so that you'll be here to tell others when I'm no longer able to continue. Well, certainly our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. We hope you want to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness, which is a primer for what this is about. To understand the background of the Council on Foreign Relations, James Perloff's book, Shadows of Power. The book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, written by Professor Quigley, the leading historian of the last century, who had Bill Clinton's mentor, who had written a book called The Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, which takes you into the secret society that created the Council on Foreign Relations. The only problem with the book is that Professor Quigley never understood the occult origin of the secret society that created the Council on Foreign Relations, and that takes us into Masonry and the occult. The book, of course, The Unholy Alliance by James Wardner, Behind the Lodge Door by Paul Fisher, Masonry and Masonry Behind the Light by Bill Sneblin, just four of the books we carry on Masonry, and then, of course, the video, Masonry, Friend or Foe. And then, some of the most amazing DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings by Chris Pinto, and now, and it'll be available here in just a few days, Riddle in Stone, a three-hour documentary by Chris Pinto, part two, a continuation of his story, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. We've been watching this every evening, and I will tell you it's gripping. It will tell you what really happened when America was created, about the architecture, the secret architecture of our nation's capital, about, and you will actually see all of the occult figures and the zodiacs and all of the things that have to do with astrology in our nation's capital, and you'll say, what is that doing there? I always thought we were a Christian nation. And of course we will answer that question for you, because we were founded as a Christian nation, but also as an occult nation. And you have to understand of this dualism that has existed since the inception of America, indeed since shortly after the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth. There have always been those who would use the military and financial power of America to bring about world democracy, a new world order, a new world religion. The new DVD, Riddle, written in stone, I will tell you, something you'll never forget. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.